Welcome to Jags Drive Time with John Osherhoos and Brian Sexton. Wow. Jags Drive Time starts right now.
There you go. We ain't going nowhere, y'all. We ain't going nowhere. Hey, let's go, man. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Play fake. Herbert drops the throw. He's going to get hit. He's going to get sacked. Josh Allen got him. Big play by Josh Allen. Got him back. Huge play by the Jaguar outside linebacker.
Come on, man. Come on. You know how I'm coming. You know how I'm coming. You know something that they don't know. You know something that they don't know. It's already been written in stone, man. Jacksonville on top. Jacksonville on top.
Josh Allen mic'd up. Look for that on the website, social. Probably a little bit of that in Jags Wired later this evening. Good morning and welcome to Jags Drive Time. Presented by Jet Home Loans. I'm Brian Sexton from TIAA Bank Field, joined by John Osher. And it is Wednesday, but it's really Thursday in the week. It's challenging to know what day it is. Doug and his team do know.
It's that way every week for me.
Yeah, you just keep rolling so, through it.
And again, what a time. And, you know, listening to Josh Allen on that, first of all, good for him. Last six games during this winning streak, I'm not saying Josh is the reason for the winning streak, but during the winning streak, four sacks, 13 pressures, two forced fumbles. He's playing very close to, I think, how he wants to play. I don't know if he's at his standard yet, but he's playing really well. And the other thing, the Jacksonville on top, and just the one way this does compare to 17, it's really different than 17. But the one thing that it is the same that really resonates every time this team is good is what a connection there is when this team is good to the fan base. And I know that's true everywhere with every team that gets good. I get that. But it's special when it happens here. And, you know, the tears that people write me when they watch Sounds of the Game, for example, and the emotion that these people are feeling over this, it's a really cool time. It's cool what's going on in the field, but that is, for you and I, Brian, people have been here forever, covered this thing forever. It's really cool to see.
I think a decade from now, when there's some hardware, perhaps, in a trophy case,
right,
and more wins, you'll look back at this particular stretch of games, this late season run where players, big players, Josh Allen's obviously one of them, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, they started making plays, then showed up at the Waffle House in Jacksonville Beach, and all of a sudden, you look back and say that was when the team and the town connected.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't like to diminish things that happened in the past. I thought it connected in 17, too. There was a connection there.
But it didn't sustain itself.
It didn't sustain. And there was also no Waffle House. And that was, as Patrick Mahomes says, baller move.
Yeah, baller move. All right, let's get into big things here on a Wednesday morning in advance of Saturday's AFC Divisional Round playoff at Arrowhead Stadium. Let's talk about the turnover margin, and this one is troubling. Over the last five games, all wins for the Jaguars, by the way, they've turned the ball over 12 times, seven interceptions and five fumbles. Now you can take this last game out, but that's still seven turnovers in four games. It's become a bit of a problem for this team. And of course they put themselves in holes and had to dig themselves out. The Jaguars were +3 at Arrowhead Stadium in week 10 and lost by 10 points. You can't be -3 and expect to have an opportunity to beat the Chiefs on Saturday afternoon. The head coach is well aware of the problem. You can see the look in his eye.
We're fortunate. We're very fortunate. We're very fortunate the other night. That doesn't happen, you know, for five takeaways or five giveaways and come back and win a football game. That just does not happen. And that's something that we address our team a lot about. And, you know, I don't want to overemphasize it, but at the same time, they have to understand that the seriousness of keeping the football and the seriousness of creating takeaways. And, you know, our defense has also been, you know, getting the ball a little bit here too, so that's been a bonus for us. But, you know, offensively, we just can't give it away like we've been doing in order to win these games, especially now where we're at.
The Chiefs are a challenge because of Pat Mahomes, but also because of Andy Reid. And it's the master and the student this week. Look, if you look at all the great coaches in this league right now, Andy Reid is at the very top of the mountain in terms of his creativity. You remember that spinning circle thing they did out in Las Vegas a few weeks ago? They're creative. They're willing to be creative. They're not scared to take chances. And it puts a lot of pressure on the opponent. Doug Peterson knows what he's getting because he knows Andy Reid.
Listen, I owe a lot to Coach Reid, you know, my career, not only as a player, but as a coach. And I still want to pick his brain and learn. He's been doing this a long time, and he's been, you know, really, really successful, you know, at it. So anything I can learn and take away from him is a blessing for me.
And finally, it's not an exaggeration. Arrowhead Stadium, especially during the playoffs, reaches an entirely new level. It is as loud and as boisterous as you'll find in the National Football League. And it's interesting because the Jaguars have had the wind at their back the last couple of weeks with an amazing crowd of their own here in Jacksonville. Now the wind's in their face. Now they've got to be the ones to distribute, to display poise in the noise.
Nothing prepares you for that. I can turn the noise here as loud as I want, and it's not going to make an impact. You know, but it's loud for them. You know, it's loud for their defense, and you know, we both have to play in it, obviously. But it's a great atmosphere, and these fans are they're passionate about the Chiefs, obviously, and it's the loudest for a reason. And we've just got to be able to go in there and it just focuses you in, you know, more specifically on your job. You know, you got to be able to hear in the huddle, things of that nature. And you just got to have a lot of the nonverbal communication, you know, on point.
And those are big things here on Wednesday morning. Let's start at the bottom there. I grew up in Kansas City, and I can remember when Arrowhead Stadium was a tomb, a mausoleum. It was empty. That stadium, when full, seats 84,000 people. I was there closing day 1984-85 against the New York Jets, where there were 16,000 people in the stands, right? They have built this thing over time into something incredibly special. Winning teams obviously do that, but the people in Kansas City take a lot of pride in the fact that they're going to make it really difficult on the opposing team.
It is really rough, and that can be a huge factor. They are also strangely not unbeatable there. And in the last 4 years, they've hosted four FC championships games, lost two.
Yeah.
So that tells you that there is a formula to go win this. I think the Jaguars, I think Trevor's right when he said yesterday, they've communicated pretty well in some tough environments this year. They've gone on the road and they've played okay. I mean, two of their wins down the stretch were on the road, not in environments like this. But it can be done, and I think that'll be interesting to sort of watch Sunday what sort of formula they try to use to win out there. I mean, I think you have to force Mahomes into not being perfect, which teams have done. You saw it last year. You were at the championship game.
AFC championship game last year, John. A good, but I don't think a great Bengals defense, right?
Right, good.
Not stacked like San Francisco's is. They frustrated the hell out of him.
Yeah.
He was running left and right and throwing balls over receivers' heads. There was one famous third down opportunity where he had Tyreek Hill running wide open. And we've seen Trevor Lawrence shoot over some receivers' heads a couple of times this year. But you didn't see that from Patrick Mahomes over this run. And yet, he was confused or angry or frustrated. He made mistakes,
Yeah. Epic
mistakes in the red zone late in the ball game that allowed Joe Burrow, the calm, collected quarterback that day, surprising as that sounds, to win.
Yeah, and so you make that happen in some key situations, and then I keep going back, and I know we're sort of off topic.
No, we're not.
I keep going back to when Trevor gets hot right now, he gets blazing. Where he's as good as any quarterback in the league for stretches. You can't be better than he was for the last two quarters in a series.
Right.
Get into that kind of a rhythm, shock him a little bit, and get Mahomes off spot. There is a formula there to win, and Kansas City not being unbeatable at home sort of plays into that. I think if they played 10 times, KC wins 7 or 8. Don't get me wrong. They're the better team. They've earned this number one seed. They've earned the Goliath role. But it's not Denver 96 in terms of impossibility here. So it's going to be very interesting on Saturday.
Here's the interesting part, and the reason I wanted to include the prevailing winds in our storyline today is because not every quarterback in this league can stand in the shotgun with that kind of noise and be able to focus and decipher what the defense is doing and then communicate it. We heard from every player in the locker room yesterday. Communication, communication, communication. It's key. Trevor has that ability to be able to take that difficult situation, and his heartbeat doesn't get too high.
Yeah.
He doesn't lose his focus. That's rare.
If we learned anything on Saturday, I made the point on Monday, and I'm glad I said it. We learned more about Lawrence on, Saturday than we would have had he been perfect. When your heartbeat doesn't raise and you don't panic after four picks in that situation, knowing, guess what, Brian? Those four picks were different than 1 o'clock against the Texans in October. The entire football world's watching. He intrinsically knows Twitter's blowing up and writing him off. He, you know, to come back from that and play that kind of level, not just play okay, but get increasingly better, get increasingly, you know,
his mental game is as sharp as his physical.
I don't want to say it's unprecedented what that is, because there's a lot of great quarterbacks with mental game, but I can't imagine anybody better in that situation.
Well, it's the third best come-from-behind win in playoff history.
Yeah.
And, John, the fifth best come-from-behind win in NFL history.
Yeah, it's – and, again, I think a lot – I'm not sure any of those comebacks were as awful in terms of the quarterback position. I don't think all those picks were his fault, but as a quarterback – you really own any pick. So to come off with four and then just click it and be as good as there is in football, that's otherworldly. I mean, that's next level stuff.
All right, let's touch on the other two big things quickly, and that's the turnovers. And we've seen them in recent weeks. And yeah, obviously, there were five last week. So it's a big point. But it had been trending in that direction, John, since the Cowboys game with the three turnovers and the two interceptions that day. It has become something the Jaguars have been able to overcome because of their defense, but you can't go do that on Sunday in Kansas City and expect them to be able to compensate.
No, you have to turn that. But I think that does, again, speak a little more to the formula. I don't think – it's hard to say because they've been doing it, but this doesn't feel like a turnover team. I guess because we watched them all year and they really weren't. And then they've had some weird ones the last few weeks. But – if you turn that and then take advantage of your opportunities, then I think you make this a game in the fourth quarter. So it to me, what the turnover along with the six wins during the streak speaks to, I think the defense deserves maybe a little more credit than they've gotten for the other night. And I say that, a lot of people have given them credit. But the defense, five turnovers, that could have been much, much worse to come from behind from. And they managed it. It was a key point in that game, and I know we're moving ahead now. 24-0, the defense got two stops to hold it to 27-0. It didn't seem like much at the time, but
you wouldn't have won without it.
Right there, that could have turned, you know, in 99, that turned into 38-0 out here, and the game was, you know. Yeah. So the defense really kept that thing at bay, only gave up two long drives, kept that thing in range, and then the second half, of course, was unbelievable. So I think that turnover thing maybe speaks to how well this defense is really playing.
Yeah, final thought, and that's on the relationship between Andy Reid and Doug Peterson, and they are very close. I mean, they go back, as Doug said yesterday, to 1995, so 28 years. And just a quick story that I had been saving. The day after the Kansas City game in Week 10 was Judy Coughlin's funeral, as many folks remember that she passed in November. And I looked over as I walked into the church, and there was Andy Reid sitting next to Doug Peterson, right? And then afterwards to watch Andy and Doug and interact with Tom and his family. And I mean, there's a closeness among some of these men in this league. Not all of them, but in some of these old school guys in particular. Andy and Doug have a very close relationship off the field. Not this week necessarily.
Right.
You got to be able to separate those things. But this is student versus teacher and friend versus friend.
Yeah, and I, you mentioned earlier, and you're right, I agree with you, master versus student. Doug's pretty good.
Yeah.
And you know, so I think Doug...
He's taught him well.
If he was sitting in here, would say, yes, Andy's the master. And Andy's done it longer and had more sustained success. But Doug calls plays... knowing when to do certain things in games, yeah,
it's an intriguing relationship.
And I'm stopping short of saying that he's better than Andy Reid because that's not what it's about.
Right.
But it's not a mismatch. It's not a mismatch.
He learned well.
Yeah.
And Doug gave him a lot of credit yesterday leading up to it. So there are big things. When we return, we're going to flip the script a little bit. We'll go with this or that. And then we are expecting Maurice Jones-Drew to join us at the top of the hour. We're back right after this. And welcome back, Jags Drive Time. Brian and John with you from TIAA Bank Field, brought to you, of course, by Price.com. Just had confirmation from Maurice Jones-Drew that he is going to join us at 7 o'clock. They had some power issues with those big storms out in California, so we'll grab him by phone here in a couple of moments. First, though, time for this or that.
This or that. This or that.
And it's brought to you by Price.com, the easiest way to save money with comparison shopping, cash back, coupons, all in one. It's free. Try Price.com today. John, we'll begin with you.
I will wait for my graphic because I want to make sure that I'm right. Oh, no turnovers, two takeaways.
You put a lot of thought into this.
Well, no, I did. What's more important, Brian, for them to be turnover free or for them to create big moments and big plays? I would say both, because I'm not sure they can win this without this sort of a stat.
Being plus two?
Yeah, in that range. They can't do what they did the other night because the crowd's too much against them. And it was
Andy Reid won't run the ball just seven times.
Yeah. I would say the no turnovers is the more key because you don't want that crowd to start believing and sort of start and start feasting on the situation. You can get turnovers. If the two turnovers lead to touchdowns, then they're more important. But I think it's critically important that you not give away points, give away momentum. You don't want the offense in the first quarter coming off the field saying, here we go again. We're, you know, a defeatist thing, because I don't know that there'll be the energy to pull them back up on their own, if that makes any sense.
And
maybe shortchanging them. Maybe they could, but they don't want to put themselves in that situation because early turnovers are going to lead to the deficit that they absolutely don't want.
From an energy standpoint, which you know you're going in an energy deficit with that crowd overwhelming everything, I say you got to have the two takeaways. You're going to need perhaps a defensive score. Look, I mean, the Chiefs can score almost at will, seemingly at will. We saw them do it last year in this game against Buffalo when you thought, well, the Bills got this one. There's only 13 seconds left. Nope. No,
right.
Tyreek Hill, down the field, here we go. And it went to overtime, and Kansas City won. You're going to need points. You're going to need big plays. The defense has to give them. I'll say you're going to make a mistake or two. It's going to be loud. It's going to be snowing at some point during the game now. The forecast has changed pretty radically in the last 24 hours. And so you're going to need what that defense can give you to keep the offense moving forward. I'll say those two takeaways are more important than whether you turn the ball over or not.
The huge key to me, Brian, is that you keep looking for ways that say, okay, how can the Jaguars find the formula to win this game? I do believe the fact that, as we've talked about all year, I've sort of joked that this defense and this team has been confident and believed in itself even when they hadn't earned it. You know, and I say that as a compliment in that they believed even when they were struggling that they were good. And it showed the other night. Obviously, you know, a 27-0, you have to be really dim to believe you're coming back.
Yeah.
But they believed it because they knew it and they were right. So this defense doesn't seem to get bothered or down on itself when it gives up plays. So you could easily see a scenario where this thing's 31-27 in the fourth. The defense gives up a huge play and then comes back and forces a turnover because they believe they're going to.
Well, that's what they've done. That's why they are.
So I think that in a shootout, having experience in that situation, I think will help this. The Jaguars need to get it to a shootout.
It's why they're 5-0, despite being -5
right
over the last 5 weeks, because the defense believes they can make a play. All right, here's my this or that, and it's grind it out, play possession football, keep Mahomes in the long coat on the sidelines, or run with them, right? And I say let's run with them because I think that Doug Peterson's philosophy, which is obviously based largely in his time with Andy Reid, more than half his life, I don't think going in there and being conservative is going to get it done. I don't mean to be stupid about it, but it's not like this Jaguars team is built, John, to run the ball like it was at one point in time in 17 with
right.
Fournette. You know, going back to 2007 when you had our guest at the top of the hour, Maurice Jones-Drew, and Fred Taylor. Those guys controlled the game. You don't do that. At least you haven't proven that you can do it consistently week in and week out. You talked about Trevor being the hot hand, and when he gets hot, really yeah. hot, and you have Marvin Jones and Zay Jones, and it was funny. Evan Ingram, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and Marvin Jones caught all four touchdown passes in a row, consecutive drives, last week. Let's go. Let's send the ball down the field.
Yeah.
Again, the weather conditions may change a little bit, and I know you've got to be able to run the ball some, but my philosophy is this week, let it all hang out. Let's go.
Yeah, and that thing you mentioned is intriguing. The fact that you've got four guys that caught four touchdown passes or caught touchdown passes on consecutive possessions, that's not fluky in this offense, Brian. That's been going on all year. That sort of symbolized what they've done. I think that's another thing that gives them a shot this weekend.
Yeah.
You can't really focus. You know, sometimes it's good to have a one. But if you're the Chiefs this week and you're game playing, who are you saying we have to take away? I really like there's really nobody that they have to focus on. They got to focus on four or five. And Trevor Lawrence, for a young quarterback, is remarkably good at not caring who he's throwing to.
Right.
That's literally hasn't been discussed a whole lot. That gives him a chance. I think the grind it out versus run with him will be decided in the first few series. I think they want to try to run ETN. If they can figure out a way to minimize Chris Jones and get ETN some room, then you might see them gear a little more toward the grind. If they can't, I don't think they're going to be stubborn about it.
I just go back to last year when the Bills did everything you thought it took to win in Kansas City, including grabbing the lead with 13 seconds left to play, and it wasn't enough. You can't have enough points against this quarterback and that coach in that stadium on Sunday. We'll see. All right, let's take a break. When we return, Maurice Jones-Drew joins us from California to talk a little bit about his comments from halftime on Saturday night and what he thinks happens on Saturday at Arrowhead Stadium. You're watching Jags Drive Time, presented by Jet Home Loans, and we're back after this. Jags Drive Time is brought to you by Publix. Publix, where shopping, as you know, is a pleasure.
One man stood alone, shouting at the top of the mountain, "I believe in the Jaguars!" Who is that man?
It's halftime. The Chargers are up 27-7. The most Charger thing to do is allow the Jags back in the game in the second half, and they went on a last-second field goal. All right, and I'm gone.
Welcome back to Jags Drive Time. Maurice Jones-Drew joins us by phone right now. And Maurice, Trevor Lawrence is the most beloved man in Jacksonville in the second half of that football game. But at halftime, there were Jaguars fans all over who were clinging to your words. Was it blind faith? Was it, hey, I've got nothing to lose, might as well swing at this one? What prompted that on Saturday night?
Well, Brian, first and foremost, first and foremost, hello. How are you? It's been a long time.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's a little early over here on the West Coast, but I'll tell you this. I've watched the Jags the last, really close to the last 10 weeks. And that's kind of how they've played. They've hung. People allow them to hang around. They found a way to make a play or two in the second half and get them back in the game. So if you look at the Baltimore Ravens or the Las Vegas Raiders, they're down by 17. So this wasn't a place where the Jags have been where they've folded or done anything like that. They've just continued to fight. And so knowing the Chargers, obviously being in L.A. with the Rams and seeing some of the Chargers games as well, they kind of let their foot off the gas a little bit a lot when they get big leads. And so to me, it only seemed right that after that score right before half, the momentum had kind of shifted a little bit. And knowing that the Chargers aren't one of the best running teams in the league, that they were going to give the Jags an opportunity. And sure enough, man, I mean, you can start to see the momentum start to change. Their sideline started to change. Bosa had some uncharacteristic penalties. And all these things started to happen. And sure enough, bang, boom, here we are. And the game gets close. The kid misses. He misses an extra point, right? He missed an extra point or a field goal or something. And
he missed a 41-yard field goal.
Say it again?
He missed a 41-yard field goal.
There it is. And I knew it was. I was like, it's starting to, and that kid hasn't missed at all. And actually, we had him in camp with the Rams. I say we, because I work for the Rams now, and he was really good. He just couldn't beat out Matt Gay, and it just, everything started to happen. And I kind of had a feeling, but I just knew after that first touchdown in the second, the first touchdown in the first half, right before that, you know, the momentum has shifted, and it was going to get a little ugly there for the Chargers.
Maurice, John Osier here. I we appreciate you doing this. I do stay up on Sundays and watch you when you're on the late night show. Only watch the weeks you're on. I don't watch the other weeks. But you've been on this train all along. Even when this team was 2-6, you were still talking positively about the Jags. And I know, you know, you do because you love the Jags, but there was also something you liked about this team. What has it been all along?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, during that coach search, I got opportunity to talk with Shad Khan, and we kind of talked for about about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and just breaking down different candidates. And you know, he talked about Doug Peterson and what he liked about him. And I actually was like, you know, I really like Doug Peterson. I love that he's a former player, and he's a problem solver. And I think that as a head coach isn't valued enough. Right, a guy that can solve problems for your quarterback or help your quarterback solve problems, and to me, that was always the big question. Last year, there wasn't enough quarterback resources on that team to help Trevor as he got stuck into some situations. Right, it caused a little bit of frustration. You know, guys are used to winning, whatever it might have been. Well, you bring in Doug Peterson, you have Mike McCoy as the quarterback coach. You have an OC. You have a ton of knowledge all around your quarterback to give him opportunities. And you saw spurts. You saw times where the Jags would be able to score points at will and play really good defense. And it was just trying to get it all together. And so I really feel it was after that Chiefs game where they played really well. And offensively, they kind of stumbled a little bit in the red zone. And it was like, okay, if they could get this thing, put this thing together, they'll be okay. And I feel like right after that bye week, you started to see them play different. And so to me on that show, it's like, look, I'm going to always root for the Jags, but this isn't just like me rooting for the Jags. This is actually something that's going on. They have a lot of talent on this roster. They have a young nucleus that can play really well, and they're going to continue. They continue to fight. And so to see all those things kind of happen down the stretch was awesome. And, you know, you always wish for that. Like when I was there, we always wished that we could play well in the second half and do all those things. Well, these guys are actually doing it, which – again, it's big times.
So the fight gets tougher on Saturday, obviously. That crowd, that quarterback, that coach. You're the offensive coordinator, right? I mean, you tell me. Do you grind it out or do you air it out? What's your philosophy going into Kansas City this week with this team based on what you know of it?
Well, to me, it's you want to stay balanced. And I think that's what allows you to come back against the Chargers, the ability to still be able to run the football. A lot of times we want to just throw it. Like, I get it. If you're going to play the Tennessee Titans, who have won the top, if not the top, rush defense, let's not even waste our time running our head into a brick wall. Yeah, we'll run it 5, 6, maybe 10 times, but let's throw the football a little bit because we know that's where their weakness is, the secondary. But against most other teams, you could be balanced. And I think, again, that's what allowed the Jags to come back against the Chargers. They're still able to run the football. They were still able, and they forced that. It forced the Chargers to get down to a cover three, which allowed them to take shots down the field. If you're playing the Chiefs, stay balanced. Force them to have to defend the whole field vertically and horizontally, and then see what happens. You have some advantages there in the slot with Christian Kirk. You're still able to run the football. Now you have to block Chris Jones. But other than that, I mean, these guys have done a great job. And shout out to the O-line coach, my guy, Phil Rauscher, who I went to college with, for getting Walker Little ready and being able to start in these crucial situations and not give up a pressure yesterday or last week.
Maurice, you and Fred sort of made this franchise known for running backs. It's sort of been the defining position of this team until now. Tell me about Travis Etienne. What do you like about him? Does he have a chance to sort of be on that Rushmore around this
team?
Well, I
think so. And the reason is one, they Doug Peterson is very creative in his running game. Him and his running group or whatever goes together, they're very creative, right? It's just not, here, we're just going to run the ball here and run down. They actually, they're detailed in their run game the same way they are in their passing game. And so it opens up and it stresses the defense differently than most. I was watching the Houston Texans game where Travis was able to break a long one on it looked like a wonky run play, but it created a hole right over the left side, and he was able to get through and split the safeties and make a big-time play. So as long as they stay creative in that running game and they continue to give him opportunities, and he's going to get better. I know he had the little fumblies, like early to middle of the season. But as long as he continues to get better and play his speed, the way he's able to cut, all the things, his contact balance, all the vision, all the things that he has, it's going to allow this team to keep going. Now, granted, you don't need another guy to go with him eventually. I know Hasty's there, and he's doing a really good job. But you want to make sure that you continue to keep him fresh so that he can run the way he is now later, you know, a couple years from now down the stretch. So they're doing a great job of just being explosive in the running game the same way they are in the passing game. And he's doing a great job of being patient, allowing his line to go to work for him.
Hey, since you mentioned Rauscher, what'd you think of the T formation and that fourth down play? I mean, Doug Peterson said on Monday morning, and we've been talking to him all week, about his creativity in coming up with that.
Well, first of all, Phil knows that you're supposed to steal a little bit here and there. I don't know if you call it stealing. You call it copyright infringement from Penn State. They ran that against Utah in the Rose Bowl, so I'm sure he'd been watching some tape. But that T formation, I mean, it puts defenses in a bind, because think about it. We're ready to do a quarterback sneak. We got three guys in the backfield. You know you're going to try to push. Then we sneak our running back. We do an off-tackle play, and he's able to bounce it outside and use their aggressors against him, which was a great call and a great job by Phil. But also it was executed to a T, no pun intended, by the Jaguars offense, where Etienne's able to get around the corner and use his speed and run on a guy that's not as fast as him. So, I mean, I thought, again, like I said, the creativity in the situations, I don't know if when I was playing that we would have ever done anything like that. We might have. But, you know, I think, again, it's just being bold enough to call a play like that in that situation.
All right, so here's the way I see it, based on the last time the two teams met in Week 10. And that day, the Jaguars were +3, but Mahomes threw four touchdown passes and, you know, kind of had his hand on their forehead, kind of like the older brother to the younger brother, and it just kind of kept him at arm's length. So you're not going to go run away from Kansas City and get out in front of them and blow them out in the playoffs. It just doesn't happen. My question to you is, will the Jaguars have an opportunity to win the game in the fourth quarter?
I think so. I the only thing is, Trevor can't do what he did in the first half of, obviously, this game, right? If you do that against the Chiefs, they're going to score touchdowns, and it's going to get ugly. I think if the Jaguars play clean football, which no turnovers, stay efficient, punt the ball on fourth down if you get into a critical situation, don't get too aggressive. I think they have a chance in the fourth quarter to be able to have a last-second drive to win it. The thing is, the Jags, people don't give them enough credit for the talent they have on this roster. They have a very talented roster, right? If you look at it, they have three playmakers on the outside that can all beat you. Not everyone has three corners that can stop you. You have a tight end that is flourishing the way he was supposed to coming out of college. You have a running game. You have a quarterback. Defensively, your defense, they're now finding ways to harass the quarterback. Guys are starting to show up. So they're doing all the things that you need to win a championship and to beat some of these top teams and to be a top four team in the AFC. And you know, so to me, it's all about confidence. Do you believe that you can go into Kansas City and win? I think that last game that they played there may be the deciding factor, because I want to say in that game, they had some red zone opportunities that they squandered. And if they don't squander those, the game looks completely different. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that, that there can be that confidence builder of, okay, all we have to do is continue to play the way we're playing, and once we get in the red zone, we got to make sure we have a little bit different design, which I love their design in the red zone. They find ways to attack them, all over the field. So if they could do that, I think they'll be good.
Maurice Jones-Drew from California. Is your power back on? Family doing well after all the storms?
Listen, the storms are crazy. I live on like the side of this mountain too, so there's all this running water that's flooding the streets right now, but yeah, we're getting there.
All right. Well, we're grateful that you got up with us this morning, and we hope maybe we're talking again in the next couple of weeks about this team continuing on into the playoffs.
Yeah, and John, I appreciate you staying up late, man. I know we're on late there on the East Coast. I appreciate the love and support.
No, it's a great show, and for people who don't watch it, it's post game on NFL Network on Sunday. On the weeks, I think, Maurice, it's the weeks where Rams have a home game and you can get over there. But it's a really entertaining show. Great job with it.
From one of the most entertaining players in Jaguars history. Mo, we appreciate you, big boy. Take care of yourself.
All right.
Best to your family.
Same to you guys. See you later.
All right, that's Maurice Jones-Drew. An eager, energetic, erstwhile believer in Jacksonville and the Jaguars. And we're grateful for his time this morning. We'll come back and wrap up this show on Wednesday here from TIAA Bank Field right after this. Jaguars Game Day Radio is presented to you by ViStar Credit Union. ViStar reminds you to do good and bank better. Give you an update here real quick on the weather situation in Kansas City as it stands right now. A day ago, it was going to be 46 for the high and 28 for the low. No precipitation, but overnight, it has now become high of 38 during the day. Around kickoff, it looks like it's going to be 38. And snow. Don't know how heavy, don't know how light. Kansas City's not a big, heavy snow town like a Buffalo. But that'll add to the intrigue of a playoff game.
Yeah. It's January football, Brian.
All right.
I
throw this out to you every week. Ozone Podcast?
It will be Walker Little, I believe. So that'll be interesting. Walker's been on before, but not when he was a starter. And
he played really well last week.
Yeah, I mean, he's a remarkable story, and looking forward to talking to him.
And we are telling a remarkable story through the course of this postseason. We hope you'll join us for Jags Drive Time tomorrow. By the way, our friends at Dreamfinders Homes have been the official home builder of the Jaguars, now going on 9 years. Visit dreamfindershomes.com for all the available inventory, and they say go Jags in these playoffs. For John Osier, Joe Fortunato, Brett Reber, and our entire broadcast crew here, we'll see you on Thursday as we get you set for Saturday football for the third consecutive week. Have a great day, everybody.